"'Somebody's got to do some reasoning why around here,' said Mr. Bagthorpe grimly. Then to Celia with extreme sarcasm. "'Did De La Mare, by the way, have anything to say about Arioch?' He should have known better. And Celia, after a pensive pause, began. "'Someone is always sitting there in the little green orchard, even when—' "'Look!' Mr. Bagthorpe had by now had enough of Aunt Celia, whom he could only ever take in very small doses. "'If all Arioch ever did was to sit about in little green orchards, then this whole household would not now be in its present turmoil, and you, Russell, would be hundreds of pounds better off. Get a grip on yourself, Celia.' "'I think, actually, Henry, that will do,' observed Uncle Parker dangerously. He did not often drop his line of banter, but he was serious enough now. For some obscure reason he loved his wife to distraction. Jack certainly could not see it. "'You keep out of this,' Mr. Bagthorpe told Uncle Parker. "'She's my sister, and I've known her longer than you have. She spent her entire childhood burbling about little green orchards and perilous seas and God knows what else. The only way Mother could ever get any sense out of her was by shaking her. Have you ever tried shaking her?' He looked as if about to do this himself. Uncle Parker rose with an easy movement and interposed himself between them. "'That daughter of yours is going the same way!' Mr. Bagthorpe was beginning to shout. "'If Daisy turns out exactly like Celia,' replied Uncle Parker fondly, "'then I ask for nothing more.' At this confession of outright lunacy, Mr. Bagthorpe was stumped. The interval during which he was still shaking his head gave Mrs. Bagthorpe an opportunity to pour oil on waters that were becoming more troubled by the moment. "'We are so proud of Henry,' she told the Parkers. "'At least, those of us who have heard. Perhaps you, Jack, could run up and tell Tess and William the news, and see where Father is.' Jack executed this commission as quickly as he could, because what he really wanted to do was set off with Zero on the track of Grandma and Daisy. He found Tess painstakingly reversing Voltaire to manuscript form, and clearly becoming very tired of this. "'He's so verbose,' she told Jack. "'Long-winded. If his style was any good, his books would be half the length they are.' "'I should pack it in,' Jack advised. "'I don't honestly think it's worth it.' "'What's William doing?' she demanded. "'I'm just off to sea,' he told her. "'Don't forget to say jolly good to Father when you see him.' She made no answer to this, and Jack went along to see whether Grandpa was in his room. He was, watching Play School on a portable television. "'First-class stuff, this,' he greeted Jack. "'Never had this when I was young. It's a children's show.' Jack supposed this was why Grandpa was so keen on it now. He was making up for lost time, or in his second childhood, which Jack knew to be a possibility. He shouted out the news of Mr. Bagthorpe's achievement, and Grandpa nodded encouragingly. "'Good paper, The Times,' he said. "'Wish we could still afford it. Henry'll enjoy seeing one of his plays in there. Never used to print plays in the old days, but times change, of course, I know that.' Jack gleaned from this that Grandpa's hearing aid was in one of its bad patches, which meant that it was very likely to rain later. Grandpa's hearing aid was often consulted for weather forecasts. He left Grandpa, thinking that the Sunday Times was to publish one of Mr. Bagthorpe's plays, and went on to William. As he mounted the second flight, Jack could hear the crackles and bleeps that meant William had his headphones on. Jack could guess who he was trying to contact. Grandma, when she felt low or threatened, talked to Thomas. Daisy, apparently, to Arioch. William talked to Anonymous from Grimsby. When Jack entered, William made such furious, dismissive gestures that Jack fished for a pen, wrote, "'Father is going to be in the Sunday Times,' on a torn-out page from his diary, and placed it near William. He caught sight of the drums before he left. Daisy had certainly tucked well into them with her knife and fork. When Jack went back downstairs, Zero at his heels, the Parkers had left, and Mr. Bagthorpe had presumably gone back into his study to think of intelligent and enigmatic things to say the following day. Mrs. Bagthorpe, lulled into a temporary sense of security by the knowledge that Grandma and Daisy were not in the house, was about to mount to her room and sort out her problems. "'Me and Zero are just off for a walk and a bit of tracking practice,' Jack told her. As they set off down the garden toward the meadow, Jack, casting his eyes upward, reflected that Grandpa's hearing aid had come up trumps again. "We'll have to look sharp, old chap," he told Zero. "Going to rain buckets." They padded along companionably, while Jack kept up a running pep talk, as he often did when they were alone, to keep Zero's ears and spirits up. "You'll probably be in the Sunday Times as well, old chap," he told Zero. "Not that it matters to you. You're immortal anyway." Jack encountered Grandma and Daisy in the village, looking uncommonly pleased with themselves. Each was carrying two plastic bags filled with something or other. Jack could not make out what, but had the impression that whatever it was was soft and light. "What have you got there?" he asked them. "Soon you will know all," Grandma replied aggravatingly. Jack did not for a moment believe that what the plastic carriers held was top secret. It was just that Grandma liked secrecy. When Jack realized he was going to get nothing out of either of them, he decided to branch off on his own to return across the meadow, though not without first imparting Mr. Bagthorpe's news. "I shouldn't let him see those bags," he warned. "He's already in a bit of a lather." "The day I become frightened of my own son will be the day of judgment," Grandma told him. "I care not a fig for Henry. When did you say this interview was to take place?"
"Tomorrow."
"And a photographer, you said?"
"Yes."
Jack saw an unmistakable look pass over Grandma's face. It was a look that all members of the Bagthorpe menage knew, and one they preferred not to see appear. It was a compound of excitement and pleasure, tinged with malice. It was also the harbinger of doom. It was, Jack thought, the equivalent of dead men rising and owls screeching at noon in Shakespeare's plays. He was not familiar with the collected works, nor even very familiar with Julius Caesar. "Father had better look out, old chap," he told Zero after parting company with the unholy alliance. "Perhaps we'd all better. When we get back, I'm going to look up Armageddon in the dictionary. I think it might be coming."